Archico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Hello, True Northern California. I'm Deborah Lucero, and I'm your host tonight on Butte Views and Beyond. The show is about the things that make our region special. Events, cultural happenings, artistic endeavors, museums, tourism, interesting entrepreneurs, and more. Tonight, we'll be interviewing Alan Jones, Downtown Oroville Business Association's member. He's going to tell us about a really cool farm-to-table dinner coming up Friday, August 5th, in downtown Oroville. So stay tuned. Remember, this is Butte Views and Beyond, and I'm Deborah Lucero. We're going to learn a few fun things tonight, so stick with us right here on Butte Views and Beyond. All right. All right, folks. Looks like Alan is off doing something right at this moment. So we are going to go ahead and talk a little bit about a new program that Friends in the Arts has been offering. It's gotten a little bit of press.
He's live. He's on the air.
Oh, is he on the air? Are you there, Alan?
I'm here.
I'm sorry. I thought
okay. I didn't want to say anything.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Okay. I got a hand signal that I thought meant he didn't get in touch with you.
Oh, no, I'm here.
All right, Alan. So tell us about this really cool farm-to-table dinner in downtown Oroville. I mean, I imagine tables in the streets and all kinds of stuff. Is that really going to happen?
Well, that's exactly what it is.
Really?
To give you some the background, I saw a picture on Facebook where somebody back east did a farm-to-table, and they had a table on the street with everybody who was sitting out there, and it looked really cool. And it was a farm-to-table dinner, and I just posted the picture on Facebook, and it blew up. Everybody thought that was a great idea, that we ought to do that. So that's what we're doing. We have tables that will be set on the street. We have 150 tickets. What we'll do is put them in a line down the street, and in the middle we'll have a stage set up. We have a small jazz band that will be playing. We have a fashion show that will be going on. There are several businesses that will be having booths set up, information booths, stuff like that, on the side of the street. We have an awesome menu, if you want to hear it.
Of course. Well, that's the thing everybody's waiting for, is the menu.
Yeah, we're roasting a pig. So we have a professional caterer that's coming in. They have a big spit thing where they put the pig on a rotisserie. They're coming in at like 3 o'clock in the morning to get that going. So we'll have roasted pig, there'll be rice salad, there'll be fresh peach salad, strawberry spinach salad, fresh fruit, variety of rolls and bread, and dessert truffles. Mm. And everything's local, farm to table. We're buying all our stuff, vegetables and stuff from all the local farmers. Obviously the pig's going to be local. But it's going to be a blast. It really is.
Wow.
It's on the side of the street that'll be shady.
We hope so.
Yeah, it's going to be shady. We're hoping that it won't be 108.
Yeah.
But we'll have from 5 to 6 will be like cocktail hour. The Native Sons of the Golden West have a portable bar, so they'll be set up, or a no-host bar. We also, in the downtown, we have a wine bar that's trying their best to be open, Butte County Wine Company, and they'll be featuring, I think, 17 different wineries that are all here in Butte County.
So wow.
It should be a really awesome night.
Wow, that sounds fabulous. I mean, you know, what I love about you, Alan, is that, you know, you saw something on, you know, saw a picture, you posted it, and then you said, we can do this. And that's how Oroville is. It just gets things done.
Let me correct you on that.
Okay, go ahead.
I posted it on Facebook. People liked it. My wife is the event coordinator for our Oroville Downtown Business Association. She's the one that said, we can do this. I'm looking at her, and I don't know how you're going to do it. But my wife is the one that said, we can do this.
So I
thought it was a good idea, but she's the one that's pulling all this stuff together.
All right. So do you know who the band is that's going to be playing?
The band is called Jazz Sete. And I'd be honest with you, I haven't heard it, but it's like a smaller, I mean, it's not a big, giant jazz band.
Sure.
But they've been recommended to us, and, I mean, highly recommended. And we have a music store in town, Hauser's Music, and he's in a whole bunch of different bands, and they're really top quality.
They are great, yes.
He knows these people, and they come highly recommended. And we just thought farm to table, jazz band, fashion show, just kind of all goes hand in hand.
Oh, yeah. And if people haven't been, you know, to downtown Oroville in a while, you need to get down there and understand why they would do a fashion show, because you have some of the best clothing stores, independent clothing stores in this county. So
I believe that.
I do, too. I've been there. I've shopped there. I know. So, and this Donna Jones, your wife, she's the one that really said, hey, let's get this going. So what street are you going to be on?
Myers.
We'll
be on Myers between Robinson and Bird Street. Tickets are now on sale. You can get your tickets actually online. We have our website, OrvilleDBA.com. They can go on there and get tickets through PayPal right there on, you know, so, or they can come to Coyote Clothing and get tickets, or the Chamber of Commerce has tickets also.
All right. And is there a phone number associated with all that that you want people to call?
I would say they could call my wife at Coyote Clothing.
Okay.
Or they can call here at 693-4877, and I hate to say this, but we're taking off and going to Tahoe for a couple of days. But there'll be somebody here that would have the information if they needed information.
Does the Chamber, are they selling tickets for you?
Yes.
Okay, so
they could call Tina at the Chamber of Commerce in Oroville, and they would have tickets also.
Okay, and what was that website again?
The website for the Oroville Downtown Business Association, the website is OrvilleDBA.com.
Okay, OrovilleDBA.com.
Yeah.
And that stands
for... it's a brand new website. It's still under construction, but we've just got this set up. This is the first time we've tried this, so hopefully it'll all work.
Well, I think when there's a great big pig involved, I think it's all going to work just fabulously.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, and the wine thing.
If you're not a meat eater, there'll be lots of wonderful salads and fruits and vegetables and... Oh, it's going to be a lot of fun.
Now, you know, I've been to your farmer's market, and you have some incredible farmers there in Oroville and the region right surrounding that. It's such a great growing region. So I don't know that people understand how really great this is going to be. And can you just tell us one more time, what is the date on that and the time?
The date is August the 5th. August the 5th, it's our first Friday event. So we have something downtown Oroville every first Friday of the month. And so this is our August first Friday. So August the 5th from 5 o'clock to 8 p.m., the 5 to 6 will be like a meet and greet cocktail hour type thing. And then dinner will start from 6 to 8.
Okay. All right. That sounds awesome. Well, Alan, thanks so much for coming on. And please tell Donna thank you, because I know she just is such a go-getter. And your clothing store is awesome. And I know that that's going to be one fun fashion show that's going to accompany this. So thanks again. And you guys do such great things for Oroville. Really. Thanks.
Well, thank you for that.
No, it's true.
Oroville is a great place.
It is.
In Oroville. And there's just a lot of neat things going on downtown, and people need to come in and see what's going on in downtown Oroville.
Well, and it's so historic. I mean, it really is. It is just beautiful. So, again, I'm speaking with Alan Jones. If you just joined us, he's with the Downtown Oroville Business Association, and they're going to roast a pig August 5th in downtown Oroville on Myers Street, and you can get your tickets at OrovilleDBA.com. All right, thanks, Alan. We are going to go out on a little bit of Ray Wiley Hubbard, but stick with us. Up next, we've got Christine McShane.
As the sun goes down, and I feel the earth shiver as the darkness comes circling round. And I swore I would not come here, and I know I should not stay. Any thoughts, heaven born, I have, I choose to cast them away. Appears by the water in the light of a quarter moon. She is dressed in lace and velvet in shades of grays and maroons. She knows without me speaking, until I have her I cannot rest. She smiles as she comes to me, and I lean down and I kiss rest.
All right, welcome back. My name is Deborah Lucero, and you're listening to Butte Views and Beyond. Again, this is a show that highlights some really special things about our region: events, cultural happenings, artistic endeavors, museums, tourism, and interesting entrepreneurs. And I have someone on the line that I think actually fits every single one of those categories. This is one amazing woman. She is just fabulous. You're going to love her accent. And she's just an incredible artist. We are going to talk tonight about Art Is Me, a new program by Friends of the Arts that focuses on artful aging. It is actually an Artist Activating Communities grant from the California Arts Council. We're really pleased that our region was selected. It was highly competitive throughout the state. I believe there were only 33 of these grants given. And Christine McShane is the artist who is going to be activating our community. Welcome, Christine.
Well, thank you, Deborah. That was quite an introduction. Thank you.
Well, it's true. I just think you are an amazing person, and you are doing so many wonderful things through the arts. So I was thinking, why don't we start out with just kind of talking about what is Art Is Me? We're kind of learning all of this together.
Well, we are, yeah. Well, when we were talking about putting the grant together, one of the things that I was struck by with my own experience in the community with art is how much of a lack there is in so many different places, because as an artist, and I'm sure many of them out there get the same thing, that we get called on by a lot of different agencies and a lot of different groups to come in and try to integrate art back into schools and libraries, all kinds of places. So that was kind of a big fundamental building block for the grant itself.
Correct, yeah.
And so essentially what we've got at this point are four professional teachers who are kind of giving a very concentrated and a very focused classes to try to instill, inspire, and kind of I don't know, fertilize, actually, sort of creativity back into people who are 55 and older. So, and then our hope is that not only will it benefit them, but that at some point they might even head on out as an art ambassadors into the community and kind of find ways of putting that back out into the community themselves.
You know, Christine, when we started talking about this and developing the grant together, Friends of the Arts and yourself, we talked about how in schools and many institutions, you know, people 55 plus, we grew up with a kindergarten teacher who maybe would start out playing the piano in the morning and we all might sing a song, and that might happen clear up until third or fourth grade. And
right.
that a lot of times it's not happening in the classroom anymore. So, and a lot of those people that are 55 plus and now retiring or exiting the workforce, they might have that spark or that desire. Maybe they thought they wanted to be a poet or maybe an actor or maybe they wanted to paint or maybe even be a dancer. Who knows? But there was
right.
some unfulfilled place in them that wanted that space, that creative space. And I think that's what this program is about. And I was hoping you could tell us a little bit about the teachers, because really the teaching team that we have has been absolutely amazing.
Well, we had our first class last night for the creative writing element, and that is with Virginia Partain, phenomenal award-winning teacher from Paradise. And in creative writing. And we're having the classes at my studio, and last night I had an art class in my room. And in her room, all I could hear was laughing and talking, and everybody was so involved with that, and so they just came out just expounding on how fabulous they felt about what they were able to write. And I think they wrote like 12 pages. I think she was expecting four. But they just wrote. And so she can draw out and help these people write. And so they're focusing at this point on a snippet of their life. So trying to get that biography
right.
going.
Right.
And at our, 55 and older, we all kind of think, well, maybe I've got a story to tell. And so she's trying to help them realize they actually do.
Yeah. She wrote to me saying that she was using notebooks and journals and pens, and she said, mm-hmm. but most of all, it was our hearts. And
right.
she started, first she said that she started trying to identify the censors in our heads, which we all have those. We know we have those editors that block out our creativity and our writing, and, we know we should have done this, or we believe that we could have written this, but we end up not doing it because it's just so hard when you sit down and stare at that piece of paper or you're looking at your
right.
computer and trying to create something. So she's
right.
trying to break through those blocks in people, right?
Right.
Is that the...
And yeah, exactly. And where do you start? You should give them a starting point. I think that's probably the biggest hurdle. Other than believing that you're no good, she gets rid of that, shows you how, and then gives you the step-by-step how to get started and all the materials you need to get that going. So that's
wow.
been, so far been fabulous. Then we have Janice Hoffman, and she's our dynamic movement instructor, and she has decades of experience in various forms of movement, like Qigong, yoga. She's a certified yoga instructor, ballet dance. She's done belly dancing. She's taught that even at the studio too, but she has taught it all. And her main goal isn't necessarily to get everybody up on their point, but to give them a sense of balance and a sense of owning their body and posture and movement, and because that is integral to anybody who creates. That you have to kind of be in yourself and be in your body and find your space and your
right.
center.
Yeah, and I thought something very powerful that happened the first when we had the little soiree is that we had a member who, well, someone who was thinking about taking the classes, but this particular part of the class she was very concerned with because she had had knee replacements. And just prior to coming to the event that night, she actually had to call 911 to come and help her up. And she showed up at the event and she said, until I came here tonight, I would not have probably thought that I could take this class. But once Janice took us through some very simple exercises, she began to realize, I can do this.
Right. Exactly. I think that's what we're hearing from everybody. And I think that for me, in everything, all of this, is the main goal. You actually really can do it. Whatever has blocked you in the past, whatever beliefs about yourself has blocked you from doing this, anything creative, there's a way out. There's someone out here that can help you get past that. And so we're chipping away at it.
Yes, we are.
Yes. And then we have Whit Mather. He is, he's an actor, but he's also a coach, and he's also done production work. And he is our presentation instructor. So he's going to use everything from here, his experience. He's got lots of little helpful tips about how to be in front of people, and everybody's going to give him opportunity to try lots of different things. There's a little bit of improv that comes up, which is huge fun. He likes to think of it as a sport, which it is actually. It's really quite fun. And a lot of people would know it from the TV series, Whose Line Is It Anyway? That sort of, he does a little of that. I don't want to overstate that because it's not, but then part of his program. And he just makes you feel very comfortable as a group and very safe to practice presentation in front of people.
He's wonderful. So, he's just a wonderful man. And then we have you teaching us step-by-step painting. And, you know, I mean, so many people in this community have already taken a class with you, and they know what a wonderful teacher you are, but you really do somehow, amazingly, everyone comes out of your classes with a painting. And so how are you going to use your skills in this particular purpose, in this particular program, Art Is Me?
Well, in this particular one, we're going to dig a little deeper because I want you to be able to come out knowing some structure to your painting, not just how to follow me, but also how to develop it yourself. So I really want to, without laboring points, we're going to be learning about composition, about perspective, and about color theory in a very basic way so that's not overwhelming.
Right.
And we have four different classes with me, and we're going to base our creation, the piece that we're going to make, on our original written work that you're doing with Virginia, which will be something about your life. And so what we're going to do is the first class will probably spend a little time isolating images that we can, and colors and what we want, what we're trying to say with our written piece and how we think that could be translated into a painting. And I have lots of different kinds of medium here. I use predominantly acrylic paint. But we have other textural mediums and decoupage and all kinds of things that we're going to layer in and use. And so they're going to each create their own probably fairly abstract, but a piece that can be identified as them.
Sure.
You know, I want them to come out knowing how they did it.
Right. Right, and they'll come out with something that's meaningful to them, you know.
Exactly.
And that's really the point of this whole exercise. When we started this exercise, we weren't exactly sure. In fact, the grant committee asked, "What is Art Is Me?" And it is just what it says: Art Is Me. It's all spelled together, so it looks like Art Is Me, or you know, some fancy French word or something. But it really is Art Is Me. And there is a Facebook page, correct, that people can go to. And learn more. And they can also go to 561 Studio or Christine McShane's page. And each one of these teachers also has a Facebook page, with maybe the exception of Whit. But we are really excited. We've already been approached by other places to maybe bring this into some other settings. And I'm kind of excited about that.
Yes, I think the more people understand it, I think it's a growing population.
Yes.
So this sort of thing, I think we're just sort of hitting the beginning of the waves that's building for this.
Yes.
And we're also being filmed and documented by BCATTV, so that, you know, we can actually further show and promote what we're doing once it's all kind of done. So,
yes. Yeah. Well, if you're interested in knowing more about this program, you can go to Friends of the Arts Upstate. org. That's all one word, Friends of the Arts Upstate.org, and look under the Art Is Me tab, up at the top and learn just a little bit more about what we're talking about. We'll also be posting a lot of material. BCAC TV will also be posting material, and there will be a documentary about the process. But just back really quickly to one thing that you said, Christine, and that is that we have a lot of people, actually in our area, 65 years and older. The average is about 19% of our population here in Butte County is actually aging. Actually,
wow.
And compared to California, which is 13.3%, or the United States, which is 14.9%. So, you know, that's pretty intense. And it's something that I think people are looking to figure out, what can we do? You know, with this population, how do we work with this population and make aging an artful experience?
Exactly.
All right. Well, listen, thanks, Christine. I know you are smack dab in the middle of a class, so we are going to go back and listen to a little bit more of Ray Wiley Hubbard, and I'll see you soon.
That sounds terrific. Thank you so much, Deborah.
All right. Thank you. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right, stay with us.
Well, I was born in Mississippi, at a place that I did not choose. The doctor pulled me from my mama, said, son, welcome to the blues. Welcome to the blues. When I was 18, I come to Chicago in an old brown suit and wore my shoes. Little Walter gave me a harmonica, said, this'll help you if you got the blues. This will save you if you got the blues.
All right, Butte Views and Beyond is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Friends of the Arts, a state local partner to the California Arts Council. Since 2001, Friends of the Arts has been creating economic opportunity through arts and culture by providing community festivals and events, including Arttoberfest, Chico Palio, the True North Tour, the Silent Film Festival, NorCal Jazz Festival, the Salmon Festival, and more. To learn more about Friends of the Arts, visit friendsoftheartsupstate.org. And by Advantage Insurance Services, local independent insurance broker Dave Dalton can provide for all your insurance needs. Advantage Insurance is proud to support KZFR and can be reached at 342-0540. For a quote or more information, visit them online at AdvantageInsuranceChico.com. All right, welcome back. This is Deborah Lucero, your host of Butte Views and Beyond, and I want to give a little intro to what we're going to do next. I had the distinct privilege to interview California's Poet Laureate, Dana Gioia. Dana is the former head of the National Endowment for the Arts, and I actually met him years ago in that role, and he did wonders for that association. He basically invented Poetry Out Loud, which is now in nearly every state in the union. It's also here in Butte County for the past 2 years. And he's an amazing man, and I want to play that interview for you. It was part of a new show, a new television show that we are launching called California's True North. And the True North Arts and Culture Alliance is a recognized regional network of California arts councils and other organizations. It represents five Northern California counties, Butte, Tehama, Shasta, Trinity, and Siskiyou, which is nearly 18,000 square miles, a territory larger than 10 U.S. states, yet has only 500,000 people. And of course, we all know it includes some of California's most iconic images, inspiration to artists, tourists, and residents alike. Everything from Mount Shasta, Mount Lassen, the Sacramento and Trinity Rivers, Lake Shasta, Castle Craigs, Bidwell Park, Lake Oroville, Burney Falls, the Sundial Bridge, and more. So without further ado, I'd really like to play this interview. Again, this took place with California's Poet Laureate in Redding, California. I'm your host, Deborah Lucero, and we're in downtown Redding at Old City Hall, a historic landmark built in 1907. And today, I'm excited that California's Poet Laureate, Dana Gioia, is here. Welcome, Dana.
Good to be here.
All right. So I think a lot of people would like to know exactly what is a California Poet Laureate.
That's a good question. In fact, that's the most frequent question people sure. ask me. California was the first state ever to create a Poet Laureate. It happened 101 years ago. Now, that's interesting because at a very early stage, California felt that somehow to express itself, I think to express the future of California, the beauty of California, that there should be a writer who represented the state. And so it's a symbolic position in some ways. You know, what the Poet Laureate is a person who represents the power of the imagination, the power of poetry, the power of literature, insofar as, you know, we share it collectively. And it goes all the way back to England, which had a Poet Laureate around the court. And so it's a poet who celebrates the place, who comments on the place.
I think a lot of people are wondering, why do we need one?
Well, it's, you know, I don't know if you need much of anything, but some things are so nice to have. you know, do we need that cup of coffee? No, but it helps it. What a poet, I think... the reason the Poet Laureate is important is that literature is important, imagination is important, and those things are actually crowded out more and more nowadays because we're in a culture which is super saturated with commercial entertainment. There's very few chances to reflect, and what poetry is the most concise, memorable, and expressive way that we have of using language. It's a way of talking about what it is to be alive in a way that moves people and people can remember. And so, you know, what a Poet Laureate is a symbol which exists as part of public life. I mean, the Poet Laureate is the tiniest part of the apparatus of the state of California. But I think it has, at least in potential, an outsized importance because language is important, imagination and creativity are important. And the other thing, though, is that the responsibilities of a Poet Laureate are really quite minimal. So each Poet Laureate, to a certain degree, imagines what he or she wants to do during the time in office.
Now, I understand that the program is part of the California Arts Council, and I was reading a little bit about it, and I was fascinated that our very first Poet Laureate was a woman back in 1915, yeah. as you've mentioned.
Yeah, Ina Kolbrith was the first Poet Laureate. And so, you know, it's California has always been, I think... several steps ahead of the rest of the country.
Yes.
And the Poet Laureateship was created, then it fell into abeyance for many, many years. They would appoint somebody for a lifetime.
Yes.
And, you know, and very little happened. But about a little less than 20 years ago, the office was revived, and we've had very good Poet Laureates. And so, you know, part of my challenge was to figure out something that was, you know, hadn't been done that was exciting to do.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you about, is I understand that each Poet Laureate can do some kind of creative project. And so what is it that you're doing for the state as part of your creative project?
Well, what I thought would be meaningful is not simply to be the Poet Laureate, you know, for literary communities, but to try to be the Poet Laureate for the entire state. And so I've decided that I am going to help create and participate in a literary artistic event in every county in California. Mm-hmm. There are 58 counties, which is a huge amount of territory. In fact, a couple of politicians in Sacramento pulled me to one side and said, look, people always think they can do this, but you won't be able to do it. But that just made me want to do it more. So I'm going, you know, county by county, and every event is a little different. When possible, I try to get the local champion for this program called Poetry Out Loud.
Oh, we love it.
Yeah, I was, you know, chairman of the National Endowment for the Arts for nearly 7 years. And while we were there, we created, as an arts education program, a national high school poetry recitation contest. There's been almost 4 million kids that that have now participated in this. No state has bigger participation than California, so it's the most competitive state. And so you go to Sacramento for the championship, you see these incredible high school kids, which reminds us that we do not challenge our teenagers enough in terms of just developing their creative skills, their performative skills, and when you see what these kids can do. So since only one can win the state and go on to Washington, I thought it would be fun, county by county, to bring the champs in and have them strut their stuff. You know, last night in Siskiyou, I had a young lady from Etna High School come, and she just wowed the audience.
Wow. That's
it's tough for me because I got to compete with these kids, you know. They've got youth, looks, and talent, and what do I have?
We just started it here. The Shasta County Arts Council started the Poetry Out Loud program last year. And it's been slow because a lot of the teachers, again, you know, you have to work it into the curriculum, and if they're not used to that, there's a little bit of resistance there. And then one of the questions they have, and I'd really love for you to address this, is, you know, a lot of the kids want to create their own poetry. You know, why do we have to learn some dead person's poem? I've literally been asked that. And I would, you know, I've been waiting to ask you that question.
Well, first of all, most of the selections are by living poets. But it's a very different program if you don't have to write the poem. Because most kids don't really want to write their own poem and perform it. You'll have a small group of kids that do this, and they have other outlets. They can do poetry slams. They can have their work appear in the high school magazine and things like this. But you have a whole class of kids who, by taking that barrier away, they will participate. It'll be the athlete who sits in the back of the room and never says anything. Mm-hmm. A kid from a non-English-speaking household who feels a little uncertain about his or her writing ability but can inhabit the text. I mean, one of the interesting things is if you go to the national finals of Poetry Out Loud, we've had a huge number of kids who are first-generation Americans that are winning. In fact, virtually all of the national champions have been the minorities. Wow. And so what I think Poetry Out Loud does is three things. First, it gives you a profound connection with poetry and the power of poetry because you are taking the poem and you are learning it by heart. You're bringing it into the very center of yourself. So that has a wonderful education in the humanities just in that one single enterprise. The second thing it does is it gives you access and command, mastery of great language, ideas, and images. This will do wonders for your writing, for your speaking, and I think even your thinking in the future. And finally, it teaches you a skill that will be of benefit in every walk of life, which is the ability to speak clearly and effectively in public. That's good in your personal life, it's good in your professional life, and it's necessary in public life. And those things are different because if you have a kid come and I'm going to read you my poem, what are you judging? Are you judging the creativity? Are you judging where they are in their life? It becomes much more subjective. And so this becomes a very powerful thing, which is accessible to every kid in high school.
And you mentioned that it's not really poets who may have died, that these are living poets for the most part.
And the kids can pick their own poems. And so they have an anthology. I think it's now 700 poems. And actually, one of the most interesting things that happens is the kids read through these things, and for the first time in their life, they're reading poetry, they're thinking about poetry, and then people are fascinated by the poems they choose.
Yes.
Because why do you go, why did that kid choose that poem? And you always feel like there's a deep psychic connection. People pay much more careful attention in Poetry Out Loud competitions than they do in a normal poetry reading.
I've been to a couple, and they're just amazing, and the kids are amazing, just the way they perform the poems. Yeah. Makes you cry, it makes you laugh, it's amazing.
And the other thing is that usually the kid who wins surprises the teacher. It's not their A student, it's not their best behaved student, it's often the class clown, it's the kids that don't have a channel. And what it does in a class is it I think one of the things that you want to do in education is create many doorways to success. Right now, in an English class, the doorway to success is the person who can write the paper, who can do the analysis. Poetry Out Loud brings stuff that's not analytical, not intellectual, it's not even writing. it's in a sense inhabiting emotions, inhabiting language, recreating experiences. That's a real human skill, but we don't reward it usually in class.
That's really true. And also, as you said, it just crosses over into so many aspects of life, being able to speak publicly, going and getting that first job, a first interview. All of those are so important.
Yeah, I've talked to hundreds of kids that have done this because, you know, I've been involved with it now for 11 years, and most of them say it's one of the life-changing experiences they've had in high school.
Wow.
And that's what we're trying to do, is broaden and enlarge the lives of young people through the arts and the imagination.
So going back to your childhood, what influenced you to write poetry?
I'm a working-class kid from the rough part of Los Angeles. My dad was Sicilian. My mother was Mexican. No one in my family had ever gone to college. In fact, I didn't even know anybody whose parents had gone to college. Most of the was Sicilians and Mexicans in my neighborhood. Pretty much all adults either spoke another language or had an accent. And yet, in this environment, there were people who loved poetry. My mother had actually known poems because she had to learn them in high school or grammar school. And she would quite often break into poetry. We'd be doing dishes, and she would say, "It was many and many a year ago in a kingdom by the sea that a maiden there lived whom you may know by the name of Annabel Lee. And that maiden she lived with no other thought than to love and be loved by me. I was a child and she was a child in this kingdom by the sea, and we loved with a love that was more than a love, I and my Annabel Lee." And I would be there, and a spell was cast over me, and it put me in a different state of being than I was in my normal life. And I felt these things along the fringes of my consciousness open up, possibilities, emotions, intimations of a different, a broader life. And so for me, it was formative. I never thought I would be a poet. It struck me as this was not an elite pleasure, because I didn't know any elite people. It was one of the pleasures that ordinary people had, like playing cards, singing songs, cooking. So when I went to college and they suddenly said, "Well, you know, the average person isn't smart enough to understand poetry. It's only, you know, the intellectuals like us who can master this." I was just saying to myself, that's not true. And so I was always kind of a divided person in college. But I didn't think I was going to be a poet. I thought I was going to be a musician. Mm-hmm. And finally, when I was about 20, I realized, you know, somehow the music wasn't drawing me. And I frankly didn't have the level of talent that I saw the really great people having. Even my kid brother was just a tremendous musician. And I found myself writing poetry. And at the age of about 20, I suddenly knew that my life work was to be a poet. And it was puzzling, because the question is, well, you know, I'm the oldest kid in a poor family. This is not a practical decision. My parents were just, "Oh my God, you know, I mean, they felt I would be a school teacher," which to them was bad enough, because they really wanted me to be a doctor or a dentist. They want, you know, poor families, they want some kid, you know, one of their kids to bring them out of poverty, you know. So, really for the last 45 years, I'm now 65, you know, I've had to deal with the question is, how do you make a living as a poet? And so I went to graduate school, and in graduate school I realized they were training me to write poetry and talk about poetry in a way that the very people I came from could not understand it. And it just didn't feel right. I don't think Shakespeare did that. I mean, Shakespeare wrote in such a way that everybody from the learned people to the common person could enter his work and somehow participate. So I dropped out of graduate school, and I got a job in business. And for 15 years, I worked about a 10-hour day. I came home, and I wrote every night. I wrote every weekend, and discovered myself as a writer. And then I was actually was very lucky. I became, you know, quite well known quite quickly. And when I was 40, I just quit my job and decided to support the family. Because by then I'd paid my younger brother and sister's way through college and stuff. And I just decided to become a full-time writer. And I had some bad years, but it worked. It really worked. I mean, I've been so, so lucky.
I know in 1991 you wrote "Can Poetry Matter?"
Yes,
and
that's when I was still in business. And
that's what I was wondering. You were still in business at that time, And that got wide acclaim.
Yeah, that became internationally famous, yes. And that actually opened the door, and I said, if I'm going to do it, I should do it now.
What about that paper that you wrote had such an effect on the American psyche and even the international psyche? What was the success of that paper?
You know, I wrote a piece that asked some basic questions. I mean, there's never been a society ever which has paid as many people to profess poetry as a contemporary America. We have tens of thousands of people who are professors of poetry, teachers of poetry, creative writing teachers. We even have a poetry foundation. And yet, you know, in 1991, was there ever a society in which poetry meant less to the average person? And rather than say, well, it's, you know, aren't those average people stupid, which I don't believe, I said, well, maybe there's something about the way we do profess poetry, the way we have institutionalized poetry, the way we have, in a sense, tried to, you know, to promote poetry within our culture that isn't working. And I began to look at this and said, well, you know, we've got this little closed world in the university, which is full of literary activities, but none of them reach outside. And so I began to do this. And what happened is that people all over the world eventually said, yes, I love poetry, and I try to, you know, and I can't understand what these people are doing in the university. This article generated more mail than any article in the history of the Atlantic Monthly. And the weird thing, this is back when people actually still wrote letters, yes. Is that almost all of the letters were positive. Usually people write angrily letters. And all of the negative letters were written by people in creative writing departments. And so what happened is that it created a conversation about the role of poetry in contemporary society. And I made a lot of suggestions at the end of the article about, you know, bringing, you know, poetry performance in, bringing poetry on the radio, how to bring poetry in TV, mixing poetry with music, you know, and doing things like this. And lots of people adopted those. In fact, I know a number of people who started radio shows because they read the article and they said, yeah, that would be a good thing to do. You know, in fact, Andy Jones, who has, you know, this great radio show out of Davis, you know, came out directly from, you know, from that article. So I think my article was catalytic. And what I was doing was, for the first time, even though I was a poet, making the argument on behalf of the reader, right. Not on behalf of the poet. Because poets, you know, we know what poets' arguments are. He's, I'm not famous enough. I'm not rich enough. Why don't you love me? You know, and those are good arguments. I mean, I myself. But the fact is that if you have a literature without an audience, it's a diminished thing. You know, Walt Whitman very famously said, to have great poetry, we must have great audiences too. I don't think he was talking about box office. I think he was talking about there's a relationship between reader and writer, between, you know, creator and audience. And you see this like in a career of somebody like Bob Dylan. They give each other energy. They give each other meaning. And that's what I'm trying to do, is just to bring, you know, poetry back to the people, but not through being condescending, not being simple, but by just making the best of it accessible.
I guess that was a pivotal moment, maybe, in the history of poetry. For you personally, from there to now, how has that affected you, and how do you see it affecting the country?
Well, you know, my life is so strange. I've been in business. I would run the National Endowment for the Arts. I've been working for foundations. Now to my astonishment and gratitude, I'm Poet Laureate of California. So there's two ways of answering that, which is one, walking out of my job, just quitting cold, deciding to become a full-time writer. By taking that risk, in a funny way, it put me on a trajectory that took me through things I would never have predicted. I would never have thought I would be in Washington, D.C., trying to save the National Endowment for the Arts, creating, you know, what turned out to be the largest literary programs in American history. I would never really have imagined being California Poet Laureate, because at that point, California Poet Laureate was, you know, kind of a you know, quiet little political position. And so I've been very, very lucky. But what I have seen, though, is that American poetry has changed profoundly in the 25 years since I wrote that article, which is to say thousands of people, maybe tens of thousands of people, took the challenge in that article, and we now have a very different literary culture. The university hasn't changed very much, I regret to say, but there's now a huge literary culture outside of the university, in cafes, in bookstores, in basically art council centers and cultural centers and museums, and now most poets are published and performed mostly outside the university, and you're beginning to have a kind of a broader conversation. Meanwhile, totally new forms of popular poetry have been created. If you take poetry away from the common person, I'm delighted to observe that that people reinvent it. Hip-hop became this immense international cultural force. But even in a smaller sense, in the West, cowboy poetry was revived around the same time. The cowboy poets read my article and all began writing me because they said, that is what we're trying to do. So you have this kind of popular tradition. The poetry slam goes from a single bar in Chicago to an international phenomenon. Even in literary poetry, the revival of form and narrative, what they call new formalism, has created a poetry with a much broader audience. So I think that the art has been in some ways transfigured in the United States, become more populist, more democratic, more accessible.
Very well put. Well, are there any other writers in your family?
Well, actually there is. My kid brother, who's the jazz musician, is one of the most, Ted Gioia, he's the smart Gioia. he's one of he's probably, he's just my brother. He is the best-selling jazz and blues writer in the world now.
Wow.
He did the Oxford History of Jazz, did a great book. Anybody who's interested in California jazz, read my brother's book, West Coast Jazz. It's so much fun. It just takes all the post-war history of jazz. But so my brother and I actually are both writers, and my kid sister is in the Navy. She's a Navy captain. She was in Afghanistan 3 times,
wow.
In an Army billet,
wow.
But as a Navy. And then my kid brother is a DJ. We were a great disappointment, except for my sister. We were a great disappointment to my parents, who just wanted a dentist, a lawyer, a doctor. They got a poet, a jazz musician, a DJ, and a Navy officer. But they liked the Navy part because my dad was a Navy guy.
Oh, he was. See, yeah. So there's some influence there.
Yeah.
There's some influence there. And then I just have to know. So, can you actually articulate one of your favorite authors or poets? I mean, is there someone that you go to that actually had a big influence on the way you write?
Well, I love poetry. I know lots of poems by heart, and so there's many poets that really, are deep inside of my psyche. Shakespeare. People never say they're influenced by Shakespeare. I love Shakespeare. I mean, if we have any people in the audience who don't know Shakespeare, watch it. That guy's a comer. He's got a future. Robert Frost, I love. W.H. Auden, I love. Elizabeth Bishop was my teacher at Harvard. Her vision of poetry is very influential. Philip Larkin is another one. And California's greatest poet, Robinson Jeffers, who lived in Carmel. People, his home, Tor House, is now a National Historic Monument in Carmel. Jeffers helped me see the natural beauty of California, not in a kind of romantic human way, but in a very stark natural way. I mean, that's one of the reasons he's sort of the poet laureate of the Sierra Club and the environmental movement. But there's a wealth of imagination, and California is just a wonderful place to be in because we live in a reality, both the natural reality and the urban reality of California, that has never really been completely captured in poetry. So the future is ours,
yeah.
If we're creative enough to do it.
And I suspect after you go through all 58 counties, you're going to come up with a lot more ideas. Are you being inspired to write as you're going through?
It's an absolutely insane project to say you're going through all 58 counties because some of them are hard to get to, they're everything. But the reason I'm doing it is both because I think that's a vision of what the Office of Poet Laureate should be, but also I want to see them. You know, I'm a native Californian, but I still haven't seen, you know, all of this. I mean, this state is as long as Western Europe, and it's got, you know, it's deserts, mountains, seas, cities, farms. And it's interesting. I mean, just driving, you know, for a couple hundred miles, you're in what could be different countries, different cultures, different centuries.
Yeah. Well, it's beautiful up here, and I'm hoping that you get to the 22 counties north of Sacramento. Did you know there's 22 just north of Sacramento?
Yeah, and most of them are up in the mountains.
It's a big place.
I had to get new tires last week, you know. No, I'm going to be in every one. I mean, if it, you know, I'm not going to say if it kills me, but I mean, it'll take a lot of planning. But the California State Library, you know, loves this program. We're doing it in partnership, the California Arts Council. So, I mean, I think there's a lot of excitement. And the interesting thing is that when I go to these small libraries, the librarian's not often sure about this. You know, they say, oh, you know, as a poet, every case that, you know, we have an overcapacity crowd. They have to add seats. They run out of chairs.
Awesome.
And because everywhere in California, there are people who love literature. Everywhere in California, there are painters, musicians, writers, and they love the idea of just being able to congregate. Because when I visit, you know, a place like I was in Crescent City, half of it is, you know, whatever, you know, presentation, you know, that we have in Crescent City, but the other half is the audience itself, getting all these people together. After the reading, we have kind of a public conversation. And I believe that's really important, you know, that people should, in a sense, be aware of what's in their community. In Eureka, two nights ago, there was a writer I knew from, you know, 25 years ago, and he had just come there. He didn't know anybody. I introduced him to people. Same thing happened in Yreka last night. I introduced poets to one another, which means that the visit is catalytic, and all kinds of things will happen on their own that I don't even know about afterwards as a result of that. And so I think of myself as, in a sense, in a small way, a cultural catalyst.
That's a great place to end. And truly, with the True North Arts and Culture Alliance, these are the types of people that we're hoping to introduce you to all throughout this great True North. That is Butte, Tehama, Shasta, Trinity, and Siskiyou. Thank you. I'm your host, Deborah Lucero.
I'm Dana Gioia. I'm Dana Gioia, the California Poet Laureate, and I want to recite a poem about our native state. The poem begins by describing how somebody from back east might see our landscape. And then at the very end, it talks about the way that we see it. California hills in August. I can imagine someone who found these fields unbearable, who climbed the hillside in the heat, cursing the dust, cracking the brittle weeds underfoot, wishing a few more trees for shade. An Easterner especially, who would scorn the meagerness of summer, the dry, twisted shapes of black elm, scrub oak, and chaparral, a landscape August had already drained of green. One who would hurry over the clinging thistle, foxtail, golden poppy, knowing everything was just a weed, unable to conceive that these trees and sparse brown bushes were alive, and hate the bright stillness of the noon, without wind, without motion, the only other living thing, a hawk, hungry for prey, suspended in the blinding sunlit blue. And yet, how gentle it seems to someone raised in a landscape short of rain. The skyline of a hill broken by no more trees than one can count. The grass, the empty sky, the wish for water.
Butte Views and Beyond is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by the Yoga Center of Chico. Longtime yogis Tom Hess and Rex Stromness have created a new yoga center dedicated to yoga and holistic healing. They offer workshops, retreats, private sessions, massage in both day and evening classes. For more information about the Yoga Center of Chico, located at 250 Vallambrosa Avenue, Suite 150, next to T-Bar, call 342-0100 or visit yogacenterofchico.com. And by the Sierra Nevada Brewing Company, producers of fine ales and beers. Sierra Nevada also offers fine dining at their tap room and restaurant at 1075 East 20th Street in Chico. More information at sierranevada.com.